Okay, everybody, welcome back. This is the Good Bit Podcast. This week on the show, we're chatting about a brand new film by the name of Maestro, starring, directed by, produced by, and written by Mr. Bradley Cooper. An incredible performance and an incredible film. Definitely an incredible campaign for this Oscar that may or may not be coming up next month. And I don't know if he's going to get Best Actor, but he's definitely going to get something he must do. Just wanted to do a little bit of disclaimer to start things off this week, as we are now here in this new kind of era of the Good Bit, which we spoke about last week on the show. And by the way, I just wanted to say a big thank you to everybody who listened, but more importantly, to everybody who got in touch and reached out and said, you know, sent messages, texts, spoke to me in person, and sent tweets. Can you call them tweets anymore? On X? No, it's not Twitter anymore. What do you call them? They sent posts. Messages on X, on Twitter, and Instagram, actually swiping up on the stories and that sort of thing, just saying how much they enjoyed last week's episode, how happy they are that the Good Bit is back in their ears. So that is very, very nice to see. I am incredibly grateful for everybody who listens. Sometimes it's funny because, you know, you put so much time and effort and stuff like that into this passion project, you know, this, at the end of the day, a hobby, you know, that I've done for so many years and just really, really enjoy, and, you know, wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it so much. But I just love connecting with people, talking to people, networking through this medium of the podcast and stuff. It's just been a brilliant opportunity and just a brilliant experience doing the Good Bit Podcast over the years. But every so often, you know, you maybe go a couple of weeks without posting one, or, you know, it takes a lot of effort to kind of edit them, or, you know, all the stuff that goes into, you know, promoting the episodes on social media. You don't really want to be a burden on people, you know, but you have to do it anyway. You know, you have to kind of get your name out there. I've said loads of times that if I didn't have the podcast and I wasn't an actor and a creative person and I didn't have stuff to talk about and put out there and promote, I would probably try and, you know, hibernate from social media, because it's such a negative kind of space a lot of the times. So when there is some positivity to be had, so for example, someone sending a nice message or making a nice comment about the podcast, that's so nice to see. And we try to stay as positive as possible on the Good Bit, you know. So anytime we're chatting about films and stuff, we try to avoid the negativity. We try to speak about all the things we liked about the film, the good bits of the film. Wink, wink. So yeah, so where was I going with that? Yeah, so, you know, obviously being on social media, it can be quite toxic. It can be quite, you know, overwhelming at times with the amount of people on there, the amount of negativity on there, and the amount of content that it's just, you know, the way that our brains have been trained now, where, you know, you just go from TikTok to TikTok to TikTok to Instagram Reel to Instagram Reel to YouTube Short to a YouTube long compilation to a full-length podcast to a podcast trailer. It's just one thing after the other. And it is actually, I think, hurting our generation. I've found that when I'm reading books, I'm losing interest a lot more than I used to, because I'm used to now swiping on TikTok and stuff, you know. But at the same time, we're on those social media platforms to spread the word. You know, TikTok is at the Good Bit Pod, Instagram is at the Good Bit Pod, X at the Good Bit Pod. And they're on there because we're trying to spread the positivity, but also we're trying to get our name out there. We're trying to get our content and our words of wisdom and our laughs that we're having together and stuff. We want to share that with you. So the fact that I'm getting lots of messages over the past week, since the return of the Good Bit, since, you know, this brand new season, this brand new era that we're, this bit of a revamp we're doing now in 2024, it's so humbling, it's so gratifying. And it's just lovely to hear that people are listening, people are out there. You don't see the positivity as often. You know, you go on Twitter and you're just hit in the face with all the negativity. So the fact that, you know, you're there and you're getting messages and you're getting feedback and people are like, you know what, I really enjoyed the episode. It's so nice listening to you guys on these long drives. You and your partner, because, I mean, last week it was me and Iona, my partner, my better half in life, you know, not just on the podcast, but my partner. She, you know, has only been on the podcast a few times, but we have such a nice kind of vibe on the podcast. Just obviously, just by being together for so long now, it's so nice to have her on the podcast and just chat as if we're having a production meeting. And of course, we know, you know, we're talking about the podcast and stuff, and we know the microphones are on, and we know the cameras are on, you know, so we're not, you know, revealing everything about the podcast that we've got coming up. We've got so much, like, exciting things planned and, you know, loads of things in the pipeline ready to come out. But essentially we are, in last week's episode, we were having a production meeting, just recorded, taped to air, is what I was saying, you know. And everybody was listening to that and saying, you've got such a nice rapport and your chemistry is really good. And it's really nice listening to you, you know, like someone was saying they were out working and they just had on the new episode last week and it made them want to go back and listen to the older ones from last year and stuff. So all that stuff is always so lovely to hear. It is not kind of lost on me, the fact that people are out there and are listening, because you don't get 6 million retweets and, you know, and not everybody who listens or sees the posts, comments and stuff like that. Not everybody likes the stuff. Sometimes you get a little bit disheartened, and it's just the natural thing with social media. You know, what happens with YouTubers when they, you know, they absolutely knock their pan in trying to put out a big video and then no one watches it. I've been there, you know, I've done that. I did that for years. And, you know, it's funny now just sitting here chatting, you know, forgetting the camera's on and just chatting into the microphone. This reminds me of the YouTube days where I would just sit and I'd talk and either people would listen and some people wouldn't, and that would be absolutely fine. But because I really enjoyed that, it was, again, it's a hobby that I do on the side. Then every so often you get a wee message, you get a wee comment, and people or tell you to your face. That's always even better. You know, I always don't know how to react, you know. Oh yeah, I was listening to you this morning or whatever. It's so nice. So thank you so much to everybody who was listening last week and hopefully is listening to this episode. And I've totally rambled now. This was only supposed to be the introduction for the disclaimer of this episode. We're going to talk about Maestro. And because we've started fresh with a new era, a new beginning here on the Good Bit Podcast, we are doing a lot of trial and error. We're doing a lot of new ways of recording. We're doing different, you know, using different equipment and different cameras and different mics and new equipment and stuff. So this week's a perfect example where my co-host this week, Ian Grieve, may or may not have fully turned my microphone up to the proper level for the first 25 minutes of this episode. Well, now it's going to be longer now, but up until about halfway through this episode, my microphone is slightly quieter than Ian's. So if you can bear with us for about 25 minutes of the upcoming conversation, it does get fixed. We do notice it for the last half of the episode. So yeah, it's all trial and error. These things happen. At a time we're kind of like, oh man, I forgot to turn that all the way up, but we don't know how it sounds until after. So obviously the fact we recorded this a couple of days ago or whenever it was, now I can listen back to it and go, ah yes, that microphone certainly wasn't turned up to its proper level. So hopefully that's okay. Hopefully you don't mind for the first 25 minutes or so of this upcoming conversation. I'm a little bit more on the quiet side, which is rare. I'm a naturally loud speaker, as you can probably tell, but you can hear Ian nice and crystal clear. And then, as I say, after about 25 minutes, it's all picked up again and you can hear us both at the same level. So, yes, hopefully you enjoy. Hopefully you can get past the fact that I'm on the quieter side this week. But yeah, let's chat about this brand new film that you can find on Netflix, by the way. If you missed it in cinemas, don't worry. It's going to have a lot of Oscar buzz. It got some Golden Globe nominations and some BAFTA nominations and stuff. So definitely have a check out of it on Netflix. Bradley Cooper, Carey Mulligan, an incredible film, and let's chat about how much we enjoyed it and what it kind of meant. I was going to say what it meant to me, but more so what it meant to my co-host Ian on this episode of the Good Bit Podcast. It's all about Maestro on Netflix. I hope you enjoy.
Let's see, I'm trying to think of the setup now because of you. Make sure you didn't kick the table.
Don't kick the table, don't kick.
Right,
chair.
So maybe move the table this way a wee bit, away from you. That's fine. Just a ball here, yeah? That's yeah. Okay.
Okay, am I still going to sound okay?
Yeah, you're going to sound fine.
Okay, right, let's go. There's always a wee interlude before this.
You can move it a little bit more towards you, but you know what I mean? Because it's
just
heavy. Not on the table, the mic.
The mic.
Mm. Yeah? That's bro. That's just about perfect.
We'll see. As perfect as we can get.
Aye. Okay, so you're going to have to chop all this crap off.
That's all right. There's always a bit before it. Right, here we go. Okay, everybody, welcome into another episode. This is the Good Bit Podcast, and we are back in a brand new year. I forgot to tell you, this is going to be one of the first episodes of 2024.
I'm honoured.
So, I mean, your first footer of the year.
Happy New Year.
How was your new year?
Oh, it was amazing.
Good one?
Yeah. I discovered that I was an introverted extrovert.
Oh.
You know, it came up on Instagram and it informed me that that's probably the type of person I am.
Right.
It's good to know that after about nearly 60 years, you know.
So does that mean?
So, well, it means that I like social occasions, but yes. I like to have a get-out plan. So basically someone else is having a New Year party and I can leave whenever I like.
So you don't have your own party?
Yeah, so it's not in my house.
No.
So you can never escape your own house, you know?
Yeah.
So it's perfect.
I consider myself a social person and a people person.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, you need the out.
You need the out. You need a parachute.
especially after you've been drinking and maybe a long day or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been a bit of a...
Yeah.
Yeah. But my New Year was great too.
Uh-huh. Did you feel the enforced joy wave over you? Or
at like midnight as the New Year began?
Uh-huh. Did you feel genuinely joyous, or did you feel that you had to put it on a little bit?
Sometimes I do feel like I put it on, even at Christmas time, which is like one of my favourite times of the year. Sometimes I'm like, I'm just enjoying the festive season.
Yeah.
I don't have to overly show it.
Yes.
You know, you may have had a difficult time doing that this year, otherwise you were playing Santa Claus.
Well, yeah, well, I don't like to say that in case there's any children listening.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
For fuck's sake, man.
Well, you weren't playing the real Santa.
I am the real Santa. How dare you?
That explains everything in this room. I mean, all the movies.
Absolutely.
The
yeah, I am the real Santa. This is just my stock room. You know, people people think it's like Abbey Road, but no, it's a stock room.
No, it's the North Pole. It's freezing in here.
It's North Pole, yeah. Aye, it is a bit, actually, yeah. But yeah. I don't like to get sweaty in my studio.
That makes sense.
I should have a T-shirt with that on it, shouldn't I?
Sweaty in the studio.
Yeah, no, I don't like, no sweat in the studio.
That's something that would be on a mug.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, there's a thing. I could start, maybe. Do you think I should start merchandising my Santa?
Absolutely. The Santa merch, but also just the Ian merch.
Right, yeah.
And some of your famous sayings and stuff we could get on T-shirts and
books. Could you imagine?
Yeah.
I need to ask all my ex-students what my sayings are.
Do a survey.
Yeah.
Any famous things that you remember from years past.
Embarrassing things he said in class.
Yeah. Anytime people try to, like, ask me if there's like an Ian impression or whatever, it's always like the word bollocks always comes up.
Yeah,
but that's a word you would use a lot.
I don't know if I do say that a lot now.
Maybe I don't know if that was
I've changed.
That you've changed.
Mm.
The Christmas time in the new year clearly has changed you. Be Santa.
Yeah. It's funny, I don't have a problem not swearing when I'm Santa.
Oh, really?
No, not in the least.
Even when the parents are in?
Yeah.
You ever made a comment?
No, not in the least. No, okay. Isn't that bizarre?
You ever had like just a total nuisance who is asking for everything?
No, it's usually funny when they do that. You know, you get kids coming in saying, I'd like an iPhone and a laptop and a PS5. And you look at the parents and they're sort of... Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're kind of like, you know, I'm thinking, my God, how much money have you got?
Yeah.
And then I'll say to them, how old are you? And they'll say, six. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
are you sure about this? You know, this is, you know, so anyway,
I find the whole idea of gift giving so funny and brilliant and stuff, but it's also really awkward when you're opening the present as well.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
Yeah.
Because you have to have a reaction because you don't want to let the person down.
That's it.
Who's giving you the gift.
Yeah.
The worst one is when you get a card. Uh-huh. And there's maybe money or a voucher in the card.
Right.
And you open the card and you have to pretend you've not seen the voucher.
Yeah, uh-huh. And
to Chris, love Ian. Oh, you got a voucher too?
A double take, yeah. See, I think they should do that. I think we should not do, you know, in acting classes you do, what's it called, that memory thing, the...
Oh, yeah.
What do you call it? You have to think of a time when your cat died.
Well, emotional recall.
Emotional recall, yeah. That's it. I think what we should do is lessons and getting presents.
That's a good one.
And we give them socks and you've got to act like you'd just be given the keys to a Ferrari.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and that's the acting lesson, you know. Something like that.
It's always funny when you bring something up as well and someone maybe has already got you a present.
Mm.
Oh, I would really see this mug that you've made me coffee in.
Mm.
One of them would be great. Oh, we'll just need to wait and see.
Yeah.
And it's like rude.
Oh, aye. Yeah, absolutely. As soon as that's it, you know, you've got to be careful what you say this time of year. Like, it's not, never ever say, oh, I need to go and buy some socks. You know, even if you really do.
No.
Why am I wearing these? I'm going to take these.
I don't know.
It's a tricky time of the year, isn't it?
It's tricky. Yeah. It's passed now. And, we had a great Christmas.
Yeah.
A great
and day. I don't have this anymore. See, you wouldn't, if you see me in the street, if this podcast makes me very, very famous.
It will.
People aren't going to recognise me. I'm not going to get the benefit, Chris,
of
the fame, because I'm not going to look like this.
You could wear a fake beard.
I could.
When you go out.
When I'm being me.
Yeah.
That's fine, yeah.
Are you someone that notes down any New Year's resolutions?
Not at all.
Because, I mean, you can start a New Year's resolution at any day of the year.
I need any time.
But there's something about January 1st.
I think you can bore yourself to death with that as well, because it's always going to be the same. I need to lose weight. I need to be more healthy. I need to save money. It's always going to be the same. I need to quit fags. I need to, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like maybe you should do something you know, a little bit more like I'm going to be a pop star or I'm going to become a Bitcoin millionaire or, you know, something just a little bit more bizarre, you know, just to test yourself and make it more interesting. So, but I'm not doing any of those things. But I mean, all of the above, you know, all the time.
Whatever's going to benefit you.
You know, yes, I need to lose weight. I need to be healthier. I need to try and stay alive, you know. All of these kind of things, because I've got an awful lot of things I want to do. So it's basically about my to-do list.
Yeah.
I do rethink my to-do list now and then. And I'm thinking, right, okay, I'm going to try this year not to let work pull me into a tunnel so that I don't have any hobbies.
Right.
You know, and stuff like that, because I'm very like that.
Yeah.
If I'm working on a play or something like that, I don't think about anything else. And it's not good. Isn't good. It's I'm better at what I try to do if I've got diversity, if I'm doing all these different things, you know, just happier all round. I don't know about you, but... yeah, that diversity helps.
It's really important, yeah, but you're right. I mean, you make a to-do list on a daily basis to get stuff done for the day, but I guess using January 1st as an excuse to have a super to-do list for the rest of the year, then that's great. And it may help some people and stuff, but
yeah.
I like to have a starting point, but whether or not I'm going to have anything that's going to be much different than what I've had the past 5 years, like
there
save more money and watch more films and learn more about stuff, you know, that's what it's going to be every
year. Saving for a mortgage.
Right, that's
real. Going to get engaged, whatever, you know what I mean? It
get
could
my
be
own car, that's one.
Get your own car. But that's okay. Yeah. Does she pay all the bills for it?
Well, I pay like the petrol and stuff because I use it more.
She
pays for that.
So we've had to
sort that out.
Well, that's not a bad arrangement because if the clutch goes,
that's
you know.
True. Yeah. That's very true.
You're
I'm sure that's very interesting for people to listen to. in terms of
course it is.
In terms of films, obviously, you were telling me just before we started rolling there that you've not managed, maybe work has taken over your life a lot this year and you've not managed to get out to the cinema very often.
It's not really to do with work, though, but it's to do with... I think after the blip, after the lockdown and everything, I sort of cancelled my subscription. I think I said that before in the last podcast, but I've just not got back into the way of doing it.
Yes.
And I'm into music and things like that. And but I'm not... I'm thinking, is that my fault? And I've been trying to analyse that for this discussion. You know, I'm still not convinced that cinema's got its act together and that it's offering what it used to do. I'm still not... I'm trying not to be cynical about it, but... It's starting to improve. I mean, there are a few films, there are only a handful of films that have come out that I'm sort of thinking I would like to go and see. And as soon as I hear the reaction to some of those films, I'm like, well, I'm glad I didn't bother,
right, exactly.
You know? And so that there's a couple of things, really. One is the sort of fetishized need for people to be critical that I've noticed on social media and different places. And I think it comes from watching X Factor and all these different programmes where people are being judged, you know. And now we've got talent shows where there's not even real people on it. The people who are on the talent shows are celebrities.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an ever-decreasing circle. And you think, well, all they're doing is trying to expand their CV and say, I'm available for Panto or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, I can sing as well as be on Coronation Street or whatever. So television is full of that. And any time I see real people on TV doing anything, it's usually pointless or family fortunes where they have to make a complete tit of themselves in order to get on, you know. Right. So I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on this. I'm interested in it. But I think our culture at the moment is kind of dangerously beige and uninteresting. It's almost like I was watching a television programme. It was last night. It was Top of the Pops in 1977.
Right.
Christmas Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
And it was awful. It was just full of this awful, dreadfully wallpapery music.
Yeah.
Terrible stuff.
Yeah.
And Legs and Co. and all that doing this. Oh, God, it was terrible. It was terrible. And I was thinking, thank God punk happened just about then, or it was happening, and it hadn't quite caught on to Top of the Pops yet. But I think we need that again. But I've been saying that for about 15 years,
right.
I think. And so anyway, cinema, back to cinema. Cinema's the same. I'm sort of feeling, well, when there's more interesting things... I've been to the GFT more than anywhere else, really.
Yes.
And I saw Maestro at the GFT because I wanted to see it in the cinema before it came out on Netflix, yes. which is today, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's out today. And the only other films I've seen is Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Yes.
Which I felt duty-bound to go and see. So I would have something to say about it. But yeah. again, you know, there's that thing. My students says, what did you think?
Right.
I'm thinking, what's this desire to be critical? You know, it's that...
Back to the New Year's resolutions then. One of the reasons why I want to kind of watch lots of, you know, other different films, TV shows, that sort of thing, is to have the opinion when someone asks you and you have something to talk about.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, like, not seen it.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it yet. All this stuff.
Yeah. Yes, I've done a lot of that, you know? You can imagine.
But you've got nothing to talk about. So, for example, Barbie and Oppenheimer, that was, I had to make a point to go see those two because everyone was talking about it.
Obviously. And obviously, you're doing this.
This is also another
doing the podcast. You have to.
But with Maestro, I knew it was coming out on Netflix. And I was just saying to Mandy there, it's weird that happens quite often now. Maybe it is with like Disney Plus too, where like you have to make a point of going to the cinema. But then 2 weeks later, it's going to be on a streaming service, whereas before you had to wait for the DVD or you
absolutely.
Had to wait for the VHS.
It's different again.
If you wanted to see it again, you had to wait for a bit. But now it seems like really quick satisfaction with that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Literally weeks after the film came out, it's now on Netflix.
I almost feel like they're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
What's the best way to do this?
And in terms of the cinemas figuring things out after the blip, you mean how the cinemas is run and how the experience is, or the films themselves?
I think... everything. I think about storylines, subject matter. What are we talking about? Do you have to be worthy?
Right.
You know, and even then, there's a lot of movies that have really important things to say, and we're almost not allowed to criticise them if they're bad movies because what they're talking about is worthy, is important.
Yeah, yeah.
Genuinely important, I'm not, you know, but the movie might still be terrible. But I don't even listen to critics on podcasts anymore, really. The reason is because you think, I don't know if they're being genuine. You know, I saw that film, it wasn't good, but you're saying it's wonderful and important, and you're like, it wasn't, you know, the subject matter is important, there's no denying it, you know. But
there's the clickbait aspect of it as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
the
worst movie of the year, and you have to click in to see what they're saying, and it's people, like a Marvel film or something.
Absolutely,
where you want to go to a Marvel film to have fun, you know?
You're not going to
see something arty, you know?
Oh, no, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
I thought that was good.
Yeah, then. I enjoyed that.
I thought that was good.
Yeah. But again, I didn't see it at the cinema. I saw it on Disney Plus. So, yeah, exactly. And Indiana Jones, it's out on Disney Plus now. So I'll watch that there because I've heard the critics having a go at it. But I just want to enjoy it, you know. It's not that I don't want to talk about cinema or talk about films or music or anything like that.
Yeah.
I just don't want to set out to be critical and that be the thing. I want to sort of engage with what it's trying to say and see if that takes us anywhere, you know? That kind of thing,
yeah. Well, in terms of Maestro then, I mean, I was told to go see it at the cinema because of the audio and, you know, for the
absolutely,
experience. You know, it has been a while since I've been to the cinema and not known anything about the film. I didn't see the trailer. I knew, you know, I really like Bradley Cooper. I knew he was going to be in it. I saw Carey Mulligan. Was it Promising Young Woman she did a couple of years ago? Which I thought was a great film.
I can't remember.
It was the most recent thing I'd seen of her, and I thought she was really good. So I was like, okay, that'll be fun. But it's been a while since I've been to a film in the cinema where it totally kind of you're engrossed in the film. But it's really powerful, really moves you, and you leave the cinema a bit like, whoa.
Yeah.
Because the films I've been going to see are Oppenheimer to an extent was like that as well, but that was more of a spectacle, I guess. But Barbie and Guardians and so the new Ant-Man and these films,
there was that as well.
Oh, wow, that really moved me.
Yeah,
I guess Oppenheimer to an extent, but especially Maestro, it was I'm really glad I saw it in the cinema.
Mm.
Whereas, will I watch it on Netflix now? The fact that it's there gives you the option.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I saw it at the cinema because I wouldn't have enjoyed it.
It depends on your perspective as well. I definitely will. I'll watch it. A few times. I might even buy it because I would want to watch it. Because, I've been wanting to see that film for a long, long time.
Really?
It seems like they must have made it ages ago because I've known about it for a long, long time. And,
4 years apparently. Bradley Cooper was working on it when he was doing Star Is Born.
Right. They must have filmed it a long time ago because I think they put back the date of its release basically for the Oscars, I think, to try and optimise that. Maybe I don't know if that's the tactic, but So I was dying to see it, and then saw that it wasn't until the 20th of December that it was going to be out. And then when I saw that it was coming to have a limited run in cinema, I thought, right, definitely going to see it. For me, the reason being that Leonard Bernstein is one of my heroes.
Okay.
You know, for warts and all, he is. I just think he was a fabulous man. I first came across him watching a documentary on BBC Two when he was conducting, they were re-recording West Side Story with Kiri Takanawa and, I can't remember the other guy, not Placido Domingo, the other guy, Jose Carreras. Mm. And what struck me about it was his obsession, was I shouldn't use the acronym OCD, but there was an element of that need for it to be exactly right that I saw in him as an artist. And I suddenly thought, yes, there is that, you know, being someone who always counted things and I was very superstitious, so I had that slightly growing up. I've never really ever told anybody that, but I have that. And things, when I'm directing things, I want things to be exactly like that. Needs to be there. Needs to be there.
Perfectionist.
Same with me. No, it's not. No, it's not that. I hate that word. It's not perfectionist. I need it to be like that. It could be something else. It could be like that.
Yeah.
But I don't like that. I want it to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be ba-bum, not bum-bum. You know, it has to be like that. Otherwise, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's seeing that in somebody else and amplified, you know, a thousandfold, was quite encouraging. And also, I found him fantastic, fabulous. And I loved his attention to detail. I loved his musicality. To me, is completely miraculous. I mean, how he... West Side Story is probably my favourite musical to listen to, but I don't like watching it.
Okay.
I love listening to the music. Yeah. And Romeo and Juliet, I think it's the fate of it, the fact that you can't do anything to change it, it's still going to be, they're going to die,
right.
You know, things like that. Fatal Attraction does the same thing for me. I can't bear it, you know. Love West Side Story. I think it's miraculous. I love America and all these different things that the different influences he had. And then I was introduced by a friend to him conducting Mahler and things like that, you know, and it was in a very sort of, not in a highbrow way. It was kind of like, oh, listen to this, man. You know, here's David Bowie's new album. And oh, listen to this. It's Mahler. Oh, okay. You know, and Mahler's fifth, Mahler's second. Oh, man, it's brilliant. It was that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just adored it. It was just so passionate and so theatrical, and so you could close your eyes and listen to it, and you could imagine all these pictures, you know. And to this day, I find that kind of music more moving than anything. You know, it has an effect on me that I can't really describe. It just completely takes me to a different place.
Yeah.
And it always has been the thing that did that for me. So I just loved the movie. It just took me on a journey. I love Leonard Bernstein as a teacher.
Wow.
Because I think essentially that's how he saw himself.
Yeah.
Or I like to think that. I've read many biographies of... but I loved the fact that he talked to his kids and he asked them what they were listening to. And there's this whole... You should find it. It's on YouTube. Him talking about the Beatles. And there's a song that the Beatles have, She Said, She Said.
Yeah.
And he talks about, oh, this is amazing. Listen to this, how it's in 4-4. And then suddenly it goes into 3-4. And they're playing with you. They, you know, they're taking you on a little journey here. They're moving from a major key to a minor key.
Yeah.
And all that. And he's taking it seriously. He's not even being, he's not taking the piss. He thinks this is genuinely good music. He plays the Kinks. You know, he'll go bum, 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 bum. And he can't sing very well. But he does it. And he's still going, now they're using the Mixolydian mode and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, wow.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
Wow. The guy's taking this stuff seriously. The guy's, you know, he's not being an arse. He's not being, you know, and I love that. Passion, and I love the fact that he wanted to share it. his passion, his experience of music, which is incredibly profound. If you watch him conducting, I mean, they said he was kind of like a showman, but I actually think it's genuine. I mean, he was exhausted and pouring with sweat, and, you know, it was such a physical experience, and I love that.
Yeah,
just adored that, and so the movie did brought a lot of that to it. But I thought the movie was very, very interesting and very disciplined, and I really admired everybody's involvement in it, because it could have talked about so many aspects of his life, and it didn't.
Yeah,
it stayed away from certain things that we know about Leonard Bernstein, like his he had run-ins with House Un-American activities, with McCarthyism. You know, he had problems as a Jewish conductor composer trying to get established, but they just went straight to that first opportunity, because that's not what the story was about for Bradley Cooper. It was about his wife. It was about her, and I thought that was a wonderful idea, because even for people who know a bit about Leonard Bernstein, I think that's a lesser known story.
Yeah.
And I thought it was wonderful. And she is sublime. Carey Mulligan is amazing.
Absolutely amazing. And I love the fact that you think this whole film, I mean, it is his story, but as the film progresses, it becomes her story in the end.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just thought she was brilliant. And I don't know if it was the subtlety of her. At the end, like where she was just like so emotional with everything, and him and her family and her kids, and the realization of what she was going through. But she just played it so beautifully to counter his kind of bigness and over the topness.
Absolutely,
as a personality.
And I think in many ways as well, he's going to be a fantastic director, Bradley Cooper. I think he's only at the tip of the iceberg here, because he understands. As many others do, he understands. It made me think of things like West Wing.
Oh yeah.
And I watched a few scenes from West Wing again, and it was quite moving actually, because I thought, oh, so good. It's so good. I forgot how brilliant it is.
Go back and watch the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I would. Yeah, in a heartbeat. And what was wonderful about what he does is he allowed the actors in Maestro to work freely, and all the clever things he wanted to do as a director and with the camera and so on and so forth. He did those things anyway, but they didn't intrude. They were very subtle. You know, you hardly noticed even the changes from black and white to colour.
And you
hardly noticed the changes in aspect ratio. And you know, and all these, and the different kind of grading that was used.
I actually thought about that as I was sitting there. I didn't even know. Did it change?
When did it change?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but nevertheless, it has a subliminal effect all the way through. So very subtle and wonderfully done. But he was focusing on the actors. And I believe, I've not watched any documentaries or things about it. I will do once I've seen it again.
Yeah.
But I believe that the way they recorded the sound and everything was quite special, in the sense that they were mixing it live and doing like Robert Altman used to do. He would mic everything.
Yeah.
And then he would decide how he was going to mix it later or something like that. I don't know quite how they did it, but he mixed it live. And the conversational style between Carey Mulligan and Bradley Cooper when they're talking as a couple was just so
real,
alive. It was there was something about the way they were. It reminded me of that period. It reminded me of listening to maybe Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn talking. It had that periodness about the way they were talking to one another. They were intelligent
in the theatre, and they're on the stage at night time, the empty theatre, and like kind of rehearsing the lines together and stuff. There was something about that.
Absolutely. So talking over one another, they were a couple. They knew one another. They finished each other's sentences. It wasn't even as simple as that. It was even more complicated than that. It was knowing where each other wanted to take the conversation, obviously, you know, something like that. And the arguments that they were having were so fantastic, because they weren't just full out blah at each other. They were complex and evolving, and I absolutely loved it. So I thought the casting was excellent. I thought the way they handled the sound was sublime. The music, though, was just fantastic. It was, and the way that they didn't just sort of go, here's his greatest hits, here's him doing. I mean, they played the overture of To West Side Story, I think.
Okay.
that was about it. It wasn't about that, you know. I mean, it was quite interesting at the beginning. They're talking about Aaron Copland at the beginning. I mean, one of the greatest American composers of all time. He's up there with Bernstein, yeah. If not, you know, and probably in higher regard by many Americans, the, wow. As having the sound of America. Mm. You know, Aaron Copland's music is very much like the theme tune of West Wing.
Okay.
It's very much Aaron Copland, the whole, like, using the trumpets, and it's kind of that ceremonial kind of sound. It's very American. So I love the fact that he's just mentioned in the passing, you know, there. He's playing the piano with him.
And
I like that. It was so it wasn't about his greatest hits. It was it featured his work on Schumann and and Mahler especially, which was, you know, that was me. I was away.
Yeah,
you know, they played a little bit of Mahler's Fifth in the middle as a sort of diegetic. Well, it was no. I never was getting them mixed up. What's non-diegetic? What's diegetic?
Yeah.
But anyway, it was score. And then you have that wonderful scene in the church where he's playing Mahler's Second, The Resurrection, and you've got the choir, and she's watching him conducting, and you see the whole piece, and that was it. I was away. It's just was so immense.
It's just.
It's a lot to take in.
Doing the, like, conducting with everybody watching him. And I don't know, you know, you see in films when they try and recreate these big moments in life. And, you know, it's a biopic, essentially, so you're playing someone that was very, very instrumental in a lot of these people, no pun intended. But I don't know anything. I didn't see previous videos and footage of Bernstein.
Bernstein.
I was watching an in conversation with the cast on Netflix, and they kept saying the name wrong, and they kept correcting each other. Bernstein or Bernstein, because I think that was a big deal. So I now get confused with it as well. But yeah, watching it, it's very interesting seeing someone be so invested in the orchestra.
Yeah.
And then watching the real footage in the credits of him playing and saying, oh my God.
Yeah.
Look at the comparison between the two. And Bradley Cooper was worried the fact that, you know, he's done lots of makeup before and that sort of thing, but he had to make sure it didn't look like a comedy sketch with all these things. But he got it so spot on. They did all the makeup testing beforehand and they were like, no, this is not going to be looked at as like an SNL sketch. This isn't going to be looked at as a, what is he doing with the makeup?
Yeah.
It was so spot on that they went, we're going to leave it as that and this is what we're going to go with. Which was really interesting for me going in totally blind to it.
I mean, he's an incredibly handsome man. There was something very... He's just a compelling creature. He's just... pardon me. When he's conducting, it's just like... It's almost voyeuristic watching him.
Yeah.
Because it's such a personal thing. I don't know. He's much... I admire him more than I've admired any other musician.
Wow.
Even the Beatles or Bowie, you know, who are... gods to me, you know. But Bernstein is up there, you know, maybe even more so because of the way he wanted to share, because of the way, you know, the teacher aspect of him. I just loved that. I just thought, wow, that is so cool.
And in terms of Bradley Cooper's performance outside of the musical aspect of it, just him as a person, I mean,
spot on. Incredible. I mean, he loved life. I mean, I've read a couple of biographies and they don't, one by an assistant, I mean, he had his foibles, he was the maestro, and I think he loved to play that part, and he loved being waited on and so on. And I think in many respects what was interesting to see in the film was the way that Katie Mulligan, the character, wanted to puncture that, you know. And there was some brilliant... What's that scene where they're having an argument and the big dirigible, the big floating, goes past the windows? It's just...
The camera is so far away from them. And the way they wanted to do that was... Or the reason why they wanted to keep the camera as a wide shot is because it wanted to feel like you weren't supposed to watch or hear that conversation, hear that argument. This is what would happen if you stumbled into a room and they were having this argument. You go, oh, I better not.
Oh, yeah, you feel the atmosphere. Involved. Yeah.
And it really impacted that scene.
Yeah. And a friend at college used to say, there was an atmosphere that you could park your bike on, you know? Just, that's my sense of humour as well. That idea that you were saying that it's that feeling of you know, you walk into a room and you shouldn't, and there's an atmosphere
flying the wall kind of
thing. And And then that goes past, and it just reminds me of so many times where you would have these domestic arguments, and then something will happen to make you both laugh, you know what I mean? And you're trying your best to stay angry, and then something like that happens, and it's just, that's wonderful. Very good.
How was the reaction in the cinema when that happened? Was it similar to you?
Very good. It wasn't terribly busy.
Yeah.
It was a shame, but at the same time, I wanted to enjoy myself, so I didn't want too many people rustling peanuts.
The screening that I went to was relatively busy for the
was
film.
It? That's good. That's good.
But
where did you go?
GFT, which is first time I've been there in 15 years or something. But it's like really, it happens all the time in the cinema. Really important moments in the film, really emotional moments in the film, and powerful moments. Mm. And it's the time people need to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Just sit down. Yeah. You know, I mean, of all scenes, like, why you're leaving just now, it just bothers me. But even in the GFT,
I don't like, I can't be bothered.
But at the same time, there's positives and negatives. You know, I would have preferred to have been in the cinema for that moment anyway.
Yes.
You know, but you still have to deal with the other people. But it was relatively busy. Usually, for films that might not have as much of a following as the big blockbusters and stuff, I thought it was relatively busy, which was nice to see.
Fantastic. Super. I'm glad it had a good run because, and I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah,
where I saw it because, I'm looking forward to seeing it again with headphones on and all of that kind of thing. You know,
how that can change it absolutely,
absolutely. But I'm glad I saw it there. I went along with Mandy and I didn't know how she'd react to it, but she loved it. Yeah, what's not to like? You know, because I don't think she knew that much about him.
Yeah,
but I think she'd seen all the things I'd seen in the past, the whole West Side Story thing, and knew that about him, you know.
Yeah.
So, overall, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know what it's comparing to. I don't know what it's in competition with at the Oscars, but I'm not that bothered about the Oscars these days. But,
I know.
You know,
it's more so like the recognition, though, right? It's like, you know what your favourite film of the year was.
Yeah,
But it's almost like, if it doesn't get that nod, then,
absolutely.
You know, but it's silly. But, they're campaigning big time for it, I think, and you're right in terms of keeping it until this time of year to bring it out. They'll definitely be nominated, both Bradley and Carrie.
I mean, it sounds strange to say, but I think her especially, I think that performance is
unbelievable.
Superb. I mean, I'm sure that he'll have competition with
Cillian Murphy
et al. And I've not seen The Killing either.
The Fincher film. Yeah, me neither.
Fincher film. So,
well, let's watch that and then we can talk about it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's watch that in the next one. Okay.
The Killer. Is that going to be typical Fincher again? Like the kind of you need to watch a couple of times.
Who knows? I didn't even know till last night that it was there.
Yeah.
Because someone was talking about Fassbender's new film, the one where he's a football manager.
What's that called?
I can't remember, but it's the one about, you know, the guy who was used to get quite passionate and throw things around, and ended up managing Ghana or something. I don't know. I was listening and I was doing something else at the time, and so I couldn't hear the sound. I just noticed it was promoting his new film.
It was there,
And the picture came up of the last film, and I thought, what's that?
Oh.
And I didn't realise that it was a Fincher film that he'd done, and it was on Netflix, and so I've got a lot of catching up to do.
Lots of good ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I want to see Wonka as well.
See, that's gone over my
head. At first, I was like, I don't want to see it. But then I watched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It was on TV the other day. And I totally forgot how great it is.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I will go see the new one. And then someone that I'd been speaking to with the podcast just changed his life. It was I did not want to like it. And I loved it so much. It's one of my favourite films.
Okay.
So, I'll check that out. And
so, do you know anything about it? Is it the musical again?
No, I believe it's an origin story of him.
Okay.
It's not a whole remake of
like
the Johnny Depp film in 2005. It's not like that. It's I think it's him when he was younger. It was Timothy Chalamet. Maladingdong, so yeah.
Fantastic.
That's gonna be a good one as well.
Well, that's another one I should put on my list.
We should check out.
To catch up with.
But yeah, there's lots on YouTube about Maestro in terms of on like the Netflix YouTube channel. There's a few in conversation with videos. So there's one of a lot of the cast, hosted by Jennifer Garner for some reason. And there's also one with Spielberg and Bradley Cooper talking about it.
He produced it. That's right.
I was talking to Aaron Dockard about this yesterday. He's just obviously, you can imagine he loved the film as well. But the fact Bradley Cooper wrote it, directed it, starred in it, and produced it, you would. you'd be amazed if he doesn't win something.
Yeah.
Because every aspect of that is great.
Yeah.
And it was a full commitment to it.
He reminds me a lot of someone like Warren Beatty.
Okay.
Warren Beatty used to be like that. He was very, from early on in his career, he was very much a hands-on kind of guy. Yeah. I will write and direct and produce things, you know.
Yeah.
And there's something about the mould of that. The last time I saw Bradley Cooper, well, like, we heard him in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right, of course, yeah.
The last time I saw him, I think it was Licorice Pizza or something.
Was it Licorice Pizza?
Yeah.
Was it that?
Yeah, he plays Barbara Streisand's husband.
Okay, yeah.
A bit crazy.
I like that film, but again, a bit forgettable.
Yeah, absolutely.
A bit weird.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it as well,
yeah.
Interesting.
And I didn't know anything. It sort of got me into Haim as well, because I didn't know anything about them. And nice. Quite like their music.
That's good.
So that kind of summed it up for me, all the music. I thoroughly recommend it. I think anyone who's even remotely interested in music or how things evolve... and in some ways, it's just an interesting story about a marriage, isn't it? With two extraordinary people.
Yeah.
But I thoroughly recommend it.
Yeah.
There's nothing really in there that's going to offend anyone's sensibilities, I don't think.
And do you know, I think it was 2 hours and 10 minutes for that sort of film.
Yeah.
They got a lot out of the 2 hours and 10 minutes.
They certainly did.
You know?
Yeah. But they've left an awful lot of aspects of his life out.
That's true.
And it's they've left it out. It's just that it wasn't an issue
touch on it,
for the story that they were telling. And I quite admire that.
Yeah.
That discipline, as I said, not to get drawn in and think, OK, we need a scene with the opening light of West Side Story.
And they could have done that, you know what I mean?
They could have done that.
Oppenheimer being so many extra scenes. Killers of the Flower Moon, saw the Scorsese film. 3 hours and 27 minutes or something like that, and it's great.
Uh-huh.
The writing's great and the acting's great, but there's plenty of scenes in there where I'm like, the camera's just on this person for far too long.
Yeah, right.
And that's why it's 3 hours and 20 minutes.
See, that's another one I've noticed.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, these are all going to probably be Oscar buzz.
I suppose the last thing I would say about Maestro, to sum it up, is that if it encourages anybody, even someone like yourself, to go to YouTube and watch the videos of Bernstein talking about music, talking about the Beatles, talking to Harvard students about the Kinks, talking about I've never ever heard anyone talk about Beethoven, which you'd think would be quite a highbrow thing to talk about, you know, but no, the way he talks about Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and the way it happens is so immediate, so passionate, so identifiable, and he just has that magic touch. So I would urge anybody, if they like this film at all, to go and watch those.
To check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, there's Maestro. It's available on Netflix now, unbelievably, so definitely check it out. And with headphones might be a good way to do it, with the music.
I think so. I'm looking forward to that.
You know, that's a good idea. In a dark
geeky
room.
But yeah. Definitely. I'm definitely doing that.
All right, everybody. Thanks for checking out this episode of The Good Bit Podcast. We'll see you all next time. I was going to say something funny there and I forgot what it was. Isn't that always really awkward?
Isn't that terrible? You know, you're a genius, but the world's never going to know it because, you know.
It's always an awkward flow.
It's just a wee mind slip and,
Anyway, it's not going to be as good. Anyway, see you next time. All right.